This is the NFL Draft Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Now, here's the voice of the New England Patriots, Bob Soucy.
Hi, everyone, and welcome inside our Tom Ferry Tire Studios to the 98.5 NFL Draft Preview Show. About a month away from the 2018 draft just outside of Dallas in Arlington, Texas. I'm Bob Soucy, of course, joined by producers Tom Carroll and Dan Lifshatz. And as always, it is great to have you with us. And we certainly hope you and yours are off to a wonderful start on this Easter Sunday and have been enjoying a terrific Passover weekend. Well, as noted, the NFL draft is approaching. We're about a month away from all 32 teams making their selections in the opening round on that eventful Thursday night. And of course, this year, quarterbacks making most of the headlines as we prepare for the draft. But this show is about much more than a single position. And as we turn the page to the new season for the Patriots, even amidst the disappointment still left over from Super Bowl 52 and a costly free agency period thus far for the Pats, we want to look at the draft comprehensively. And that means talking to analysts, ex-players, NFL insiders about the process of evaluating the college prospects coming out and, of course, try to pinpoint the guys who will be the next wave of stars in the National Football League, not just here in New England. Bill Belichick has been on his campus tour. We have seen him in recent weeks pop up at places like NC State and South Carolina, at Alabama and Georgia. And of course, we're trying to identify positions of perceived need for the Pats. But beyond that, some of the best players who might prove most intriguing based on Belichick's track record. Always unpredictable are the Pats when it comes to the NFL draft. And of course, this is a team that is at a crossroads. This is a very important draft, perhaps the most important for the Patriots, not only in recent memory, but in the history of this franchise when you consider some of the losses they've sustained this offseason already, and as well the age of quarterback Tom Brady, now that Jimmy Garoppolo has gone on to greener pastures in San Francisco, and some other positions for the Patriots where standouts for many years are perhaps closer to the end than the beginning of their careers here in New England. As well, the Patriots are an organization that in recent years, when it comes to the draft, have had mixed results, frankly. Last year, their top two picks lost a season to injuries or illness. As well, the Patriots this year, because of the free agent defections, have now seen the ranks of their drafted players, players they've developed since day one of their college careers, shrink a bit. James White, for example, the lone holdover from the 2014 Patriots draft class. So this is a very important time for this team as the Patriots enter the draft with three of the top 63 picks overall. How much will they spend on defense? Will they take a left tackle? And what about the marquee position in the NFL? Here's what owner Robert Kraft had to say last week at the annual meeting in Orlando.
Robert, given Tom's age and the fact that you guys traded Jimmy Garoppolo, is finding a quarterback in the draft a high priority for you guys this year?
You know, I'm going to put my fan hat on, and obviously at some point we have to, because not just that, but you think about it. Think what happened in the 08 season when in the first quarter against Kansas City, Tom goes out. And how many people would have said that Matt Cassel would have led us to an 11-5 season? So once again, I put my faith and confidence in Bill. He knows his responsibilities, and anything can happen, even if Tom comes in tip-top shape. Part of why the networks pay us the funding they do, and the reason this is the best entertainment product in America, is you don't know. One play can change a whole season. One play with one person. So to do a good job managing an NFL franchise, we've always said, understanding quality depth management. That's our business, quality depth management. Knowing that we have a salary cap, and how do you balance that and have the depth you need? And I think you can see it in part. Bill has a great knowledge base on special teams and has been able to stress that. And I think we've always had very, let's say, in the top 25% of special teams. But that's the bottom third of our roster, too, that, God forbid, if players get injured, he can bring those players into play.
And as we talk right now, the first pick for the Pats, entrusted with Bill Belichick, is in the 31st slot of the opening round. But as we know, the Patriots are prone to move up and down the draft board. And again, they'll have three of the top 63 choices in this year's draft. This show, though, not just about the Pats. We're going to talk about a number of issues today. For example, with Andy Benoit of the MMQB and Sports Illustrated. He specifically is going to talk about the state of the Patriots, especially after some of their losses in free agency. We'll also talk quarterback play with former NFL QB Dan Orlovsky. And the NFL Network's Charles Davis gives us his thoughts on some of the top players in this draft, as well as the evolving phases of play in the National Football League. All coming up, but first, these words on 98.5 The Sports.
It's been a long day without you, my friend. And I'll tell you all about it when I see you again.
Lewis in the backfield. Edelman sprints right to left. Brady play fakes to Edelman. Throws to Lewis. Makes a twisting catch. Avoids the defender. Cuts under another. And he's bumped into the end zone. Touchdown, Patriots!
We've come a long way from where we began. Oh, I'll tell you all about it when I see you again. When I see you again.
Waiting on the snap, Lynch, who has left, Baldwin to the left as well. Stack receivers, two to the right. Russell Wilson extends the hands he has. Wilson, quick throw. And it's
good.
Intercepted. By Malcolm Butler. Butler has it at the one. Malcolm Butler stepped in front of the throw. Takes the snap. He play fakes Dwight. He looks down the middle. He fires, and the ball is caught in the back of the end zone by Danny.
It's a catch.
Amendola. Touchdown. Patriots.
It's a catch.
He made the grab just inside the end line.
Malcolm, Dion, Nate, Danny, I mean, all of them. Those guys work hard. They competed well. They performed well. They signed contracts that were better than what we were able to give them. So they all did a great job for us. And we wouldn't have had the success that we've had without the contributions of those and many other players.
Welcome back to 98.5 The Sports Hub and our NFL Draft Preview. Before we dive into the NFL draft class here in 2018, let's address the state of the Patriots. Nobody better to do that outside New England than Andy Benoit of the MMQB and Sports Illustrated. And Andy, we all saw the Eagles hang 40-plus points and more than 500 yards on the Patriots' defense. So let's begin there. What concerns you most with New England, especially up front?
You know, they don't have great edge rushers there, which has been the case for many years now. So they've had some tremendous success without those guys, but it's unusual to see a defense that they're really a bend but don't break defense stylistically. We think of Belichick as this mad scientist of a defensive schemer, and he can be, but for the most part, they're a fundamentally sound lineup and play, keep it in front of you, let's make them go 12 plays down the field. They're that kind of defense. It's unusual to see teams approach the game like that and not have a dominant pass rush, because when you're just playing bend but don't break, you're not doing a whole lot of blitzing. So someone else has to be getting to the quarterback. They've made it work for them. When they're bad, they've been really bad, and that's unusual. But, you know, it's still one of the more talented teams across the league. I think one of an above-average talent for defense, too, when you look at the entire whole. But as you guys know, in New England, 14-2, it's kind of those are the expectations, and they don't have a 14-2 caliber defense by any means.
When you talk about edge rusher for the Pats, do you define that position differently than in other places, even with the same guy perhaps, like Chandler Jones in New England versus Chandler Jones in Arizona, when it comes to the job description itself?
On first and second down, the answer is yes, your edge guy is a little different in New England because of how they play those 5-1 fronts, five defensive linemen essentially, and they make a big deal. When you do that, you don't have a lot of linebackers chasing the ball, so it's important you keep the ball inside by setting the edge. And that's a big emphasis with them, and that's why they've always had a Rob Ninkovich-type guy. I think it's Claiborne they just signed the other day, if I'm not mistaken. There are edge-setter-type players who are very valuable in the context of New England's scheme. But when you get to third down, and it's just a pass rushing situation, then it becomes the same for almost every team, and that is having a guy who can bend around the edge. So speed and pliability, those two things together are what's important. There's plenty of guys who can just get upfield, explode off the snap, but you have to be able to plant your knee and twist and turn back into the quarterback. That's what makes Von Miller so great, is he's about as good as anyone who's ever done that. Those guys are rare. You don't need them to be first-round guys. You just have to have that ability, the ability to bend the edge when they're rushing. And we're talking super athlete types, and they do tend to be found in the first round, but you can maybe get them in the second or third.
When you look at a guy like Danny Shelton, who came out as a 12th pick overall, drafted by Cleveland, and was in different schemes seemingly on an annual basis, now he comes to New England. How much impact does a guy like that have potentially for the Patriots, not only in clogging up the middle, but enabling other guys to get to the quarterback?
A lot of impact, because when that defense was at its best over the last couple of years was when Alan Branch was playing really well. And what Alan Branch did before he got old and kind of washed up last season was he could get off the snap before the opponent could, and then he could essentially two-gap from there. So you're not just two-gap, but you dislodge and relocate the middle of the line of scrimmage, and then you control that line of scrimmage. Shelton presents that dimension. The other thing he can give you, he's very light-footed. He's got a lot of similarities in style to Don Terry Poe. So for a guy of his size and his build, he moves laterally very well. So I can see Shelton being more of a playmaker than people expect. And he's next to Malcolm Brown, who's one of the league's better players in this regard. Nobody outside of New England talks about him, but that's a great tandem, Shelton and Malcolm Brown together. And a lot of what New England does starts with dominating the interior of the offensive line with two defensive tackles. They've got their two now.
Andy, locally, a lot of people discuss a need or a presumed need at linebacker. Dont'a Hightower, we assume, is coming off injury and should be ready to go for the start of 2018. But having watched the Patriots evolve like other defenses around the NFL and seeing the prevalence of a sixth defensive back, whether it's the big nickel package for the Patriots or the conventional dime package that New England might use, how does that affect the way the Patriots might dive into the draft, in your opinion, in terms of, you know, whether they value a linebacker more than the hybrid type because of the impact that a guy like Patrick Chung, for example, has had?
Those hybrid types take priority over linebacker in New England because so many teams play out of three wide receiver sets now. And when you do that, obviously you're throwing the ball a little bit more, but your running game changes as well. And you put different physical demands on the players in the box. And the quicker guys tend to do is more space when it's a three-receiver set and you're running the ball, because the receivers are lined up outside most of the time in that situation. So it's guys who can cover space and also have the ability to cover the tight end if that run play turns into a pass play. And that's why they like their Patrick Chung type of guys. What they value, at the end of this, Bob, we're talking versatility, because even if what we would think of as the more traditional linebackers, Hightower, Van Noy, those guys play everywhere as well. They'll line up on the edge and essentially be defensive ends in certain packages, and then they'll line up right behind the center 5 yards off the ball and be a stack linebacker. So you've got to be able to be a versatile piece, and if you're going to be a front seven player in that scheme. And it's usually easier to find that in a safety than a linebacker, but they're not going to look at it through position. They're going to look at it through skill set first and see who happens to fit it.
Joined by Andy Benoit of the MMQB and Sports Illustrated, shifting to the offense. Big loss at left tackle. Nate Solder, a first-round pick out of Colorado, a regular, of course, two-time Super Bowl champion for the Pats, signs the deal with the Giants. How do the Patriots utilize their left tackle, or what's the skill set, I should say, in a New England Patriots left tackle, when you look at Solder, maybe Matt Light as well, in comparison to what you might find elsewhere?
They want to put a guy out there one-on-one, because Tom Brady likes to have, he's never told me this, but I'm guessing he likes to have all five eligible receivers out running their routes to maximize his opportunities and then throwing locations and availabilities. So to do that, you have to have tackles that don't need any help from running backs or tight ends as blockers. Now, what's interesting, if we had Solder had left them 2 or 3 years ago, certainly 3 years ago, I would have said that's no big deal at all. Save the money, because this is a quick strike offense and the ball is out usually before a defensive end can get by the tackle, regardless of who that tackle is. Now, that's not true of every team, but when your quarterback is Tom Brady and you have the best pocket movement and pocket presence of anyone who's ever played, then it becomes true. Defensive ends aren't going to reach Tom Brady on three-step timing. He's just too efficient. But the last couple of years, they've gone the more traditional offensive approach, deeper drop back. Their passing game comes off of their play action and their running game, and it's a vertical element. And there were times where they did block with six guys and not just five, and they didn't put everyone out in routes. So it's a different, if they're going to be that style of offense, and they have the personnel to remain that style of offense now, this, we'll see what happens with Gronkowski, then losing Solder could be a big deal. They might have to change the way they play, and that would not be a positive for them. They can always go back to the quick strike stuff, the Julian Edelman, but this team's very dangerous as a vertical offense now, and if you're going to be vertical, you've got to have really good offensive linemen on the edges.
Tom Brady, now the quarterback, closing in on year number 19, 41 around the corner. Jimmy Garoppolo's in San Francisco. Many believe the Pats are going to draft a quarterback, or certainly will go into this draft evaluating the quarterbacks, perhaps to find the next heir apparent, so to speak, Andy. People assume that I think the Patriots are a pocket passing team only because of the Brady skill set. Do you think that Josh McDaniels is the kind of guy with this offense who would adapt to a more athletic, more versatile quarterback, somebody with a broader skill set? And I ask that in light of the fact that they recently drafted Jacoby Brissett, and Jimmy is an athletic guy who can certainly move a bit.
Yeah, and when they played with Garoppolo, what stood out in that Arizona Sunday night game in week one last year was that they had some moving pocket concepts. They had some designs that got the quarterback rolling out and using his legs within the context of the play. And it looked weird to see a guy in a Patriots uniform doing that, because you don't even think about that with Brady. It's never been a consideration with Brady. He's just not that style of QB. Good coaches in the NFL, and 90% of them are smart and good coaches. Your offense becomes whatever your quarterback is. You shape your offense around your QB. And I look at Carolina last year. They decided we're going to draft Christian McCaffrey and become a quick strike offense, just like New England. Well, Cam Newton's not that kind of quarterback. He's a power downfield throwing type of QB. And over the course of the season, that became the design of their offense. They went back to those old power throwing stuff because that's what their quarterback can do. Every offense does what its quarterback can do. So whoever replaces Brady, New England would take the best player available and then adjust around his skill set. I don't know how much to think about this now versus a few years, because the other part, Bob, and I'll be fascinating to see when he hits the wall. He will at some point, but I didn't see any close to the wall in New England last season at quarterback.
What difference maker is a guy like Dante Scarnecchia, or for that matter, Josh McDaniels, and the coaching the Patriots have, not just Bill Belichick, but the staff, even with its losses this year, including Matt Patricia to Detroit, in player development, and how do they overcome, in some cases, where they draft and the inability to get the top-tier athletes at certain positions?
Well, I've been fortunate the last few years. I've had chances to sit in on NFL meetings with coaches and players when they're implementing the game plan for the week or mini camps and they're building the offensive foundation. And what you get, and this is true in practice as well, what you always come away realizing is, wow, this is such an academic procedure. The NFL, you're there 8 or 10 hours a day as a player. It's your work life, and you're on the field practicing for 2 of those hours. And for about an hour and a half of those 2 hours, you're standing in line watching someone else do their drill while you're waiting your turn. So there's a lot of just watching and observing. And those other 6 hours that you're not on the field, you're in a classroom. So it's basically your school students who play football once in a while during the course of the week. Go back and think about when you were in school and how different it was when you had a great professor who was creative and brought out the best in you, and when you had a dud of a professor who just went out of a textbook and you were kind of on your own. And just think about, try to remember how smart you felt with a great professor and how lost you felt with an average one, and then apply that to coaching and probably multiply it by 2, because you also have the physical element of football. Great coaching really matters. It's like having a great teacher and what that does for you. And I don't know Dante Scarnecchia, but you see the product and you hear about the reputation. I would imagine he's a great in-classroom coach.
Andy, thanks for enlightening us today. Taking notes as always. Andy Benoit of the MMQB coming up. Former UConn and NFL quarterback Dan Orlovsky. But first, headlines on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Orlovsky may be checking the play off. Patriot defense looking to blitz. Here they come. Back to throw. Gets rid of it to the right. Open. Garcon got it. Touchdown. The snap to Orlovsky. Looking to the left. Looking to the left. Now fires over the middle. Caught there. Down to the 11-yard line by Austin Colley. That's his 32nd reception of the season. And so the Colts look like they're about to put one in the end zone and go ahead. Snap to Orlovsky. End zone. Touchdown. Indianapolis to Pierre Garcon. So the Patriot defense here in the fourth quarter, playing a lot of backup guys, have suddenly found themselves with only an 8-point lead with 36 seconds left.
As we welcome you back inside our Town Fair Tire studios and continue on the NFL Draft Preview, we're joined now by a former UConn standout, a quarterback in the National Football League for a dozen years, who, well, shortly after his final snap in the preseason for the Rams last year, began analyzing NFL football and first caught notice of his work prior to Super Bowl 52. And he joins us now to discuss this year's draft, Dan Orlovsky. You can follow him on Twitter at DanOrlovsky7. Dan, appreciate the time, especially over Easter weekend. I know you've got a young family and certainly are grateful to have your insights today.
No, it's good to be joining, Bob. Thank you.
I want to ask you, as a guy who played for several teams, but primarily with the Detroit Lions and spent a lot of time around Matthew Stafford and some of the guys that are still part of the nucleus of that team, now that Matt Patricia, the former Patriots defensive coordinator, has taken over as head coach, joining Bob Quinn, what are your takeaways from what you have seen thus far or heard? I know you wrote about it on theathletic.com, a site that you work for. In his initial press conference, Patricia made an impression. But what about since then do you see, and having recently studied the Patriots so extensively, what connections do you make in terms of what you're starting to see in the personnel and on the sideline?
Yeah, I think that Matt Patricia's walking into a really good and healthy situation and kind of in a distinct advantage than a lot of other new head coaches or first-time head coaches, is he's got his quarterback. I've always loved the way that the Patriots have gone about doing things, because they don't get caught up in a lot of the hoopla. They kind of have their process of doing things, their belief of doing things. And I think Matt Patricia has that to him. Like you had said, Bob, I wrote about it in The Athletic. He stands out to me with the way he carries himself. I know the press conferences aren't much, but the fact that he kind of joked about with the pencil, I'm going to put it in my ear right now. I just saw a guy who was super comfortable in who he is. And I can't sit here and tell you that's often the case for NFL coaches. You know, in the NFL in general, there's a lot of people who are self-conscious, and because it's such an entertainment-driven world, that they can get pulled in a lot of different directions because of things. And I think Matt Patricia, the thing I loved about him was he seems very confident and comfortable in himself, and I see that having a huge impact on the Lions and an organization that's kind of one of the things they've missed, is that identity, that courage to go be ourselves. And so I like the fit there. I like the process or the steps that they've taken since he's gotten there, and I look forward to them having a good draft. I'll always be a Lions fan.
And you wrote something else on theathletic.com that stands out to me. Going back to your Senior Bowl experience and what was a tough week for you, but nonetheless a very important one, and that it prepared you for how difficult it's going to be for these young quarterbacks to make that transition, however highly touted they are, to the National Football League. What do those guys have in store for them over the course of the next few months, going through OTAs, mini camp, and try to get acclimated to the pro game?
Yeah, I think that sometimes, you know, the reality is as fans or people that watch football and fans of football, there's players that are great and they make it look so easy. You know, Tom Brady and Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson and Matthew Stafford and Matt Ryan, the list goes on. There's great, great players. The big deal for kids coming out of college and going into the NFL is in college, you're surrounded by your peers. You're surrounded by guys who are within 2 or 3 years of you, age-wise. And for the most part, you're the big man on campus, and you're the person that makes it go. And there's not, I mean, there's pressure on you. Besides a handful of schools, though, it's not this insurmountable pressure. It's not this lifestyle pressure. And then you're hanging out on Friday nights. Your guys are playing video games. You're sleeping on a futon. It's not all that different than the guys you're practicing with and playing with in college. And then you go to the NFL, and mind you, there's only 32. And so that means there are 32 billion-dollar companies. And every billion-dollar company is looking for their CEO, or their quarterback is their CEO. He is the face of their franchise. And so, you know, it's like being the president. It's 24/7, 365. And so there is this, it's different when you walk into a game and you guys, you know, if you're Sam Darnold and you threw a couple picks against Arizona State and you guys lost, well, tough game. You know, it is what it is. If you're, you know, the quarterback of the New York Jets and you just threw 3 picks on Sunday Night Football to lose to the Patriots, that pressure is way different. You're walking into a locker room that there's 30-year-old men who are depending on you to do your job because their livelihood is depending on it as well. And so it's this pressure, it's this spot, it's the reality of the position that there's only 32 of you on the planet. And so everything is under the microscope.
Well, let's break down some of this year's top-tier quarterbacks with Dan Orlovsky. Dan, what strikes you about, when I say top-tier quarterbacks, the guys the conventional thought figure to go in the early part of the first round?
Yeah, so Sam Darnold, I'll start there with him. Really, really love his game. My reasons why are this. One, he's got the innate ability to create. And I love that trait because you can't coach that in a guy. That is not something that you can coach in a guy. Sam Darnold was born with that, and it's kind of grown and developed through his years of not only playing football but other sports. He can throw and judge the angles and speeds at how his guys run routes. So what I mean by that is not every receiver runs routes the same way. And in the NFL, you've got to be able to judge angles and speeds because the ball has to come out earlier than it does in college. It's just different. The game is faster. The speed is faster. The windows are smaller. And so he has the ability to judge that. That is an eye thing. Again, that is not something that coaches have drills for. You can't fabricate that. And then my third thing that I love about him is he can be very accurate with bad feet, with not perfect feet in the pocket. Now, do you wish he was? Did he wish he had better feet? Absolutely. But you can coach a guy to have better feet. There's drills to get a guy to be better and more efficient in the pocket with his feet. You can't coach a guy to be accurate with poor feet, nor would you want to because it creates bad habits. But his ability to throw accurately with bad feet is important because, one, you're probably going to get drafted to a bad team, more than likely. So one would assume your offensive line's not fantastic, so your pockets are going to be a little smaller. Two, pockets in the NFL are smaller. Unless you're a guy like, you know, Dak Prescott, whose offensive line is a stone wall, or Tom Brady, who's notoriously had a pretty good offensive line and their scheme has helped them, those pockets shrink. And so you've got to be able to be accurate without perfect feet. And so the fact that he can do that separates himself to me. Going to Josh Rosen. I love Josh Rosen's game. I see a lot of Matt Ryan in him. He's the things that I love about him are, you know, to be really accurate in the NFL, you got to be able to play with rhythm, really, really good rhythm. And Josh Rosen plays with really fine rhythm. And so his feet are consistently in good places. That's going to consistently allow him to be accurate. He's, you know, he does all the little things. The little things lead to the big things when it comes to the quarterback position. So a lot of the thing that I love about him is his mind. You can watch his tape and watch him manipulate the line of scrimmage. He can run the line of scrimmage. So when you're taking Josh Rosen, you're ahead of the game because you know mentally he understands offenses. He understands defenses. That's what processing information is. Everyone uses that term. No one knows what it means. It's not seeing the field. It means you understand what you have on offense, the problem that your play presents, and the opportunity, and vice versa. What the defense is giving to you, the problem that the defense presents to you, and the opportunity. And you can see on tape, Rosen continuously displays that. So I love those parts about his game transitioning to the NFL. Josh Allen from Wyoming, I have big concerns about his game. When you watch tape, it seems like sometimes he doesn't know what's going on. You know, like he'll go up to the line of scrimmage and it looks like he's communicating with his offensive line to change a protection. And his offensive line will go one way and somebody off some side, like a defensive end or a linebacker, will blitz and he'll look surprised by it. And that shows up consistently. And it shows to me like he, as much as I said Josh Rosen has a really good process and plan on plays, it seems like Josh Allen doesn't. And that's something that once you get to the NFL, it doesn't get easier. And so that is a concern of mine. Also, and I saw this at the combine when he was throwing. It seemed like he had poor eyes, like he was just staring wherever he wanted to throw. And the tape shows that as well. When you watch his tape, he stares at his receivers a lot. Bad eyes at the quarterback position in the NFL equals bad quarterback play. I don't hate his game, but I don't think he's a guy that you're taking right now and going, well, we got our guy. Baker Mayfield at Oklahoma needs to be in a very specific scheme. He needs to be in a scheme that is predicated upon space and allowing him to be on the move and manipulating the pocket, minimizing the issue with his height. I don't see on tape that he plays with a ton of rhythm in the pocket or anticipation in the pocket. So that is kind of why I think he needs to be in a offense similar to what he ran in at Oklahoma. If you watch, Oklahoma kind of manipulates or manufactures some big numbers passing game-wise for him with some really unique stuff that is tied to the spread offense. That's not normal to be a part of the NFL offense. So I can't tell you if it's got a chance to succeed in the NFL or not. You just haven't seen it a ton. You know, my only concern with him is the greatest part of his game, his competitiveness. Because at some point, the NFL is about being the best. And you do have to have physical and mental qualities that separate yourself because you are the best. Not that I knock competitiveness. I think it is a huge part, but I don't know if it's sustainable that to be the foundation of your game or the greatest part of your game. Lamar Jackson is a phenomenal athlete. I think that people, when they talk about him, or can he read a defense? I think that's ignorant. They just tie him to Michael Vick. I think that's ignorant. He can flat out throw the football, but he needs time. He needs time to transition to the NFL game. So it's going to be a challenge for a team to be willing to take him and have the courage to sit him because he needs some mechanical stuff that you can work on. But he can his arm can make every single throw. You can see him go through progressions. He's got a whip release, which I like. He's accurate with the football when he's in position. So, you know, I think that there's reasons for him to take or a team for to take him. I just don't think that he's in the same class as the Josh Rosen or Sam Darnold.
Hey, Dan, lastly and quickly, I'm guessing you studied that next wave of quarterbacks. Is there anybody that stands out to you who could be the next Jimmy Garoppolo, per se, the guy the Patriots might look to in this draft to be the next heir apparent to Tom Brady?
Yeah, I mean, I try to sometimes hesitate comparing quarterbacks because they're all just so different. You know, the awesome part about the Patriots is they could end up taking a guy in the first round. They could end up taking a guy in the second round. You just never know. So the kid from Toledo, I think, looks a lot like Jimmy Garoppolo and has similar traits and kind of, you know, a similar storyline and whatnot. So I like him, but there's going to be somebody in this draft that the Patriots are going to take because that they're the Patriots. I just don't know where it'll be. And honestly, you just never know. You just never know with them, and that's what makes them great. I can see them taking Lamar Jackson if he drops to the second round. I honestly could because the stuff that you could do with his game is so special.
Hey, Dan, great stuff, tremendous insight, and I think the audience knows now why I wanted to have you on. I really appreciate it. Happy Easter. Safe travels to you and yours.
Bob, I appreciate your time, bud.
Dan Orlovsky, follow him on Twitter at DanOrlovsky7. We'll be back right after this.
Yards. Who is this kid? up, goes deep, down the field, caught at the 25, Steven Mitchell. Josh Rosen, under pressure, throws, touchdown, Neil Howard, what a throw by Josh Rosen.
The NFL Draft Show, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
We're back on our NFL Draft Preview Show. We're joined now by Charles Davis. He's an NFL Network analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at CFD22. And you can see Charles throughout the week on the NFL Network's Path to the Draft at 6 p.m. Eastern. Charles, also one of the best in analyzing NFL football for the Fox Network. And Charles, this time of the year, you're attending Pro Days. You've just watched the Combine. How do you balance what you're seeing in the present with what you saw in the past, whether on game tape or even in person, when it comes to evaluating this year's draft class?
Yeah, that's a great question, Bob, and it's something that I think all of us fight, you know, because the tape is right there in front of you, and we all know the tape is what is supposed to be the number one thing you look at and to make your analysis off of. But it's really hard when you see things in person because your eyes are like, oh my God, did you see that? And I'm talking just what you mentioned, combine, pro days, all of those things. The hard part is when you're just getting started in this, those things can sway you so big. You're like, oh God, I don't care what the tape says. He just ran 4.3. He's dynamite. And then as you get a little bit older and a little bit more experienced, you start to learn a little bit more about, okay, let's pump the brakes a little bit here. Okay, let's find out what else we've got going on here. Why did he run 4.3 when I watched him on tape, I estimated him to be a 4.5 guy? Okay? So what's the answer to that? Okay? That's a big question mark and a big, hey, what are we going to do with that? So all of those things come together. And I usually use Pro Days and the Combine as more of a check mark than an actual, okay, this is where I'm going to place a guy. Because I've been fooled too many times watching guys in short, and they do such a fantastic job. And then you're like, I gotta have him. And then you're like, well, why didn't he play well? Well, that's the key question. Why didn't he play better on tape? The question I should be asking, should be answering, and that's what it comes back to. The tape should be your tiebreaker. The tape should win. Because what he does in shorts should either confirm or lead you to more questions.
You had been a longtime college football analyst and have now worked in the NFL the last several years for Fox. How has the experience meeting with coaches and players in the NFL on a regular basis, watching practices, really diving into the tape, informed or even evolved your evaluation of the guys coming out of college?
Oh, man, it's been a big change for me because there's so many things that roll into it. Who, you know, when you saw them play and play well, what were the things that they did so well that had you so excited? When you saw them play poorly, did they do it against better opponents? Did they do it against worse opponents? Did you do your homework to find out if he played injured or not? You know, Find out what's going on behind the scenes sometimes. A lot of stuff we don't know about, right? I mean, how many times have we heard someone say, if you're a gambling person and you're betting on college kids 18 to 22, you must be crazy. Because you just don't know what's going on in their lives and for them to go run it out there and play. And then to take it and say, okay, how does that translate to what I know of the NFL? Is the NFL game changing? Is the NFL game meeting colleges halfway, which I think it is on the offensive side of the ball for the first time ever? Can you plug him in now and say, this is what he did in college, he'll do that in the pros, or does he have to add to his game? All of those things come together. All those things crash through your head. But I think, Bob, when you cut through all the clutter, you know what you come down to? If you think a kid can play, you're usually right. It's a matter of just honing in on all that, and sometimes teams draft better than others and utilize that kid's skills better than others. But for the most part, teams know what they're looking for, and they go, he may work for me, but he won't work for X, Y, and Z, and those teams will shy away from it.
With Charles Davis, the NFL Network, you noted that offenses are coming halfway toward the college game. We saw the influence of the RPOs, especially, for example, in the postseason with the Philadelphia Eagles. How does that now affect this quarterback class? As you see the guys in the top tier, the top four or five, and their individual abilities to immediately or at least make an impact in the very near future in the NFL?
Yeah, I think it comes down to the staffs and the teams, Bob. It comes down to saying, okay,
this is what we know they do well. And if we're planning on playing them early, probably ought to do some of the things they do well, shouldn't we? And I think we've seen that more and more over time. And you know where I go back from my line of demarcation for it, where I think it really started? The lockout year, Bob. Because the lockout year was a year, obviously, no one could go to camp, right? There was no OTAs, no mini camps, none of that. And you remember, that was a year Cam Newton came out number one. Andy Dalton came out in the second round. Both of them started immediately, had big, big seasons. Dalton went to the playoffs. Cam threw for over 4,000 yards. And a lot of it was due to the fact of they didn't have OTAs. So the coaching staffs had to get creative, didn't they? They said, okay, he doesn't do what we do in the NFL. What does he do well in college? Let's get a lot of that stuff in early. Dallas with Dak Prescott 2 seasons ago when he had to take over for Tony Romo after the injury. I thought that Jason Garrett, Scott Linehan did a masterful job of saying, okay, this is what Cam does, this is what Dak does well. We'll start him in gun, a lot of half field reads early, and gradually introduce him to more and more of the stuff we want. By the end of the year, what did we see? Dak Prescott looked more like an NFL quarterback. And I think we're seeing more and more of that all the time. So I thought that was a big part of Philadelphia winning the Super Bowl. You know, we talk about all the RPOs with Foles. Go back and look at Wentz. So they were running the same stuff. They didn't have to drastically change on offense, and I thought that was a big deal.
Who, in your mind, are the 2, 3, 4 best players coming out this year in the draft?
I think that Barkley's the number one guy. I just think that he has been really for 2 years for me. He's one of those guys I think could do it all. And, Bob, if I were young, you know, back in my youth when we take a running back, we put in his chest 20, 25 times a day and call it square, he was the guy. You know, and I know the game's different, but guess what? He can catch it out of the backfield. He can return kicks. He can do all the things. I think he is the best player in the draft, and his size, speed, all of those and combos are just off the charts. I think that Bradley Chubb just affects the game. I was sitting around with some NFL personnel guys last night, and all they kept talking about was, I don't care if you draft a great corner. I don't care if you draft a great linebacker. If you don't have someone who can rush the passer and affect him that way, your defense is going to struggle. And that's what makes Bradley Chubb that much more valuable. So those types of guys go high on the list. Minka Fitzpatrick, to me, a great debate is, do you like Minka Fitzpatrick better or Derwin James from Florida State? Because I think both of them can do the same things. Fitzpatrick's background of being a former corner probably helps him a little bit more. But I've got people who tell me they think James can play corner in certain situations and in certain systems. Some people think he might be able to make the move like Jalen Ramsey did. I don't know if I'm quite there on that, but I know he'll be an impact player as a safety. So those are some of my top guys.
How much are you enjoying the intrigue right now that surrounds Dave Gettleman, the New York Giants, their position being where they are with the possibility of taking a Barkley or a Chubb or one of the quarterbacks or dealing that pick for somebody who wants to move up and nab a QB?
Yeah, it is intriguing, isn't it? Because Coach Gettleman's background in Carolina, he never moved off of his pick. Now, I don't know that he ever had the number two and never had a situation like he's got right now because they can go in so many different directions, Bob. If you keep the pick, which direction do you go if you're the Giants? You got a 37-year-old quarterback who got benched last year, whether he should have or shouldn't have. Let's not, you know, that's a different debate, right? But he did. 37. Team went 3-whatever last year. They're saying they're going to build around him. But 37, do you build around him and also hedge your bets and get one of these top quarterbacks? If you're the Giants and your DNA as a franchise is defense, Bradley Chubb sitting right there and you just got rid of Jason Pierre-Paul. Or do you go ahead and build on offense with Saquon Barkley and say, I'm going to help out with the quarterback in my offense and run the heck out of the ball, and Dave Gettleman loves to run the football. Oh, and last but not least, As he tells me every time he sees me, Charlie, it's always going to be a big man's game. Well, Quentin Nelson, the offensive guard from Notre Dame, sitting right there. He's the best offensive lineman in the draft. He's got so many directions he can go, and I don't think any of them are wrong.
Sub-defenses really are base defenses, it seems. The teams are taking off the linebacker and inserting an extra defensive back or the hybrid type. Do we have to rethink the way we look at depth charts and the construction of rosters?
Yeah, that's a great point too, Bob. And I think that for the most part, if you just have 11 on your depth chart in your roster, you're going to be shy, and that's offense and defense. because defensively, I think the numbers are somewhere 65-70% of the time now. They're playing non-base defense. Nickel package, sub package, dime, whatever you want to call it. So you've got to have those extra guys, these extra cover guys. You know, which linebackers are on the field during that time? Here come the extra pass rushers. So they may not be called starters in our 11-on-11 depth chart, but they're all part of their base defenses. And we got to refigure how we call base defense. Base defense now means what's your base in nickel? What's your base in dime? Right? What's your base when you're going NASCAR with your four pass rushers? Those guys are essentially starters as well and getting those same types of plays. So it's a good point. And, you know, you have it on offense too. Extra receivers, you know, which running backs are in for which packages. So anytime I get ready for a game, 11-on-11 is way out the window.
No, I understand. Well, you guys at NFL Network have a great roster of talent, and we can watch your work along with that of your colleagues, Bucky Brooks, Dan Jeremiah, Mike Mayock, and others on the NFL Network's Path to the Draft, 6 p.m. Eastern weeknights. Charles Davis.
Thanks so much for your time, and our thanks as well to our other guests this week, Andy Benoit of the MMQB and Sports Illustrated, and former quarterback Dan Orlovsky. And thanks to Tom Carroll and Dan Lifshatz, our producers on this week's show. We hope you'll join us again next Sunday for another edition of the NFL Draft Preview on 98.5 The Sports Hub. And as we part ways, we wish you and yours all the best the remainder of this holiday weekend.